As you will notice, this year we have a theme, and all of the different topics more or less fit into this overarching theme of what does it mean when we talk about the kingdom of Christ? In Regnum Christi, you know, for example, when we just said our prayers, we said, Christ our King, thy kingdom come, right? And that's our motto, thy kingdom come. And we talk so much on our feast day, as Regnum Christi is the feast of Christ the King, we talk so much about that. So what this year, what we're going to be focusing on is different dimensions of what does it mean when Christ is truly King of my heart? And what does it mean that he has a kingdom? What does it mean to belong to the kingdom? What are the ramifications in my own life of being part of this kingdom? So that's kind of the general context of where we're going to be going. So this month we're going to be focusing on, as you see that flyer over there, the angels and the saints in our spiritual lives. The original title, which was just too long, and I didn't really like the sound of it, but the original idea was this, the king's army. So if Christ is the king, one aspect of having Christ as our king is he also has his troops, so to speak. And who are the soldiers in Christ's army? Well, it's the angels and the saints, more than anything. Actually, we are the church militant here on earth, which means that we have to sweat it out and fight and do all that. As we are, to quote St. Paul, you know, working out our salvation with fear and trembling. But Christ has his soldiers in his kingdom. And it's always important that we remember them. So this morning's talk, I'm going to focus especially on the angels. And I dug up, there's a homily, and you'll notice what I gave you in the print up here is part of the homily. I took out little sections from it. If you want the whole thing, there's the QR code. I know QR codes seemingly are challenging for a lot of us, but it's actually not a very common thing. You just take the picture and it goes straight to the page. I thought that it was a fantastic homily. It was by Pope Benedict. It was on the occasion of him ordaining bishops, but since he was ordaining the bishops on the Feast of the Archangels, he kind of made the reference and the connection. So, when we talk about angels, first of all, there's a danger sometimes of getting weird when we talk about angels. I've known some people get into like angels and spirituality, and they start going off onto weird tangents and If you want this thing over here, then you pray to this angel. And this, it's like we start almost like dealing with them like they're magic, and we get into like almost a Dungeons and Dragons mentality, like they're okay, the angel of this and the angel of that. And that's not the point. Everything that angels do, they're always oriented towards. They're supposed to lead us to Christ. They're supposed to lead us to God, just like everything else that the church gives us. And Pope Benedict points out, he says, well, what's an angel? He says there's two different missions or two different functions of angels. The first thing that angels do, which is very simple, is they are perpetually in God's presence. And it's not just a matter of being in his presence, just like I could be here, I could be there in some other place. It's their identity, their entire being. Their sense of being, their identity is that they are in God's presence. And you think about the angels whose names we know, you know, Raphael, Gabriel, I'm saying kind of with the Spanish, Gabriel, Raphael, and Michael, right? Okay. Well, if you look at the names, do you notice something in common with all three of those names?
Male.
They all end with the word, with the letters L, E-L. So it's Michael, Raphael, and Gabriel, right? El was one of the many names for God in the Old Testament. It was actually a pre-Judaic name that they adopted anyway because it was just in the language. So one of, in Hebrew, one of the names for God was just El, okay? So it's in their very names. It means that their very beings are oriented towards God. And they absolutely do not have any meaning separated from that. I don't know. I mean, we know that the Latin word named Lucifer, which means light bearer, I don't know what that would mean in in Hebrew, but I would be willing to bet that every single angel has one way or another the name of God somewhere in their name. So, what does this mean then? That means that angels, number one, they are absolutely, totally, they're in God's presence, they're absolutely, totally oriented towards Him. But they are also, secondly, they are messengers. The name angel actually means that. It means a messenger. So if you combine those two concepts, what is the function of an angel in terms of their relationships with us? It is to bring God to us. That's the goal. That's why angels are important. They have the mission of, they're like bridges. They bring God to mankind and they bring us to God. Which, by the way, is actually the same role as a priest. That's why when Pope Benedict was preaching this homily to bishops, he was tying the mission of the angels and the priests. The priest is the exact same thing. We are, what makes a priest is we offer up sacrifices to God on behalf of humanity. And you, by the way, share in the common priesthood of Christ. So this is also what you do in a different way, a non-sacramental way. We offer up prayers and sacrifices to God on behalf of mankind, and we ask God to send graces down to us so that we are the midpoints between God and man. By baptism, every single person in this room has analogously a priestly role. We're priests, prophets, and kings, okay? So we all have that role of being that midpoint, that intercessor between God and humanity. We bring humanity before God, and we bring God to the people around us when we are living our vocations properly. And this is, the angels do this in a very particular way because they don't have distractions. All of us get distracted by things all the time. Part of that comes from the fact that you and I are material. You know, we have physical bodies, and we live in a world where there's all kinds of temptations on the one hand, but just distractions. You know, you wake up and it's cold outside and then your mind wanders and whatnot. Angels don't have that. Angels are absolutely 24/7 all the time fixated on God. And what that means is that they are reminders to us, properly understood, when we have a proper relationship with angels, they become reminders to us of who we are meant to be. This is what our vocation is. You and I came from God. We are meant for God. Now, we do it in a different way. We live in this, you know, in a material world as well as a spiritual realm. But what the angels, in relation to us, what it comes down to is they're like signposts that are pointing to God and saying, remember who you are. Remember what your mission is. Don't get distracted by all the other stuff out there, because all the other stuff that is out there, it's important, but it's in function of God. Our lives in this world, you know, living and being parents and having children and going to work and, you know, creating and doing all these things, which are good. They come from God. But it's all meant to be oriented towards God. And if we lose sense of that fundamental identity, then we go off the rails and we become something else. In The Lion King of all movies, there was a very important scene. And it was kind of the turning point in the movie. Okay, you remember in The Lion King how the young Mufasa gets chased off, and he was supposed to be killed, but they didn't actually manage to kill him. The hyenas got lazy. They said, okay, don't come back here. And they figured they were done. Didn't occur to them that one day he would grow up. And but the critical moment in The Lion King was when he regained his identity. Okay, he meets that monkey, whatever his name was, who goes out and brings him to the lake, and he looks and sees his reflection. But as he's seeing his reflection, he sees then his father appear. Kind of a Darth Vader moment. I am your father, Luke. Same voice. and what does his father? It wasn't Mufasa. What was the kid's name? Was Simba? Okay, Simba went off. And then, but he sees the reflection of his father, Mufasa, who speaks to him. Remember who you are. You are the child of the king, and you are anointed to be the king. Remember your identity. And once he got that, he was able to go back and reclaim the kingdom, and in typical Disney style, harmony was restored. Well, it's the exact same thing is true of us. Exact same. That's what angels. I mean, okay, forgive me, Saint Michael, if I compare you to a monkey, but angels have the same function to a large extent as the monkey and the Lion King. It says, remember what God made you for, and live your lives with that mentality and oriented towards that. And remember, the monkey ended up being one of the most important people in the Lion King movie, even though he just kind of popped out a couple of different moments and had key roles. He wasn't one of the main characters, but he was critical when he appeared. And I think the same thing applies to the role of angels in our lives. In particular, in Regnum Christi, probably a lot of us don't know this. Do you know who our protectors are? We have two protectors and two patrons in Regnum Christi. So, protector number one, St. Joseph. Seems like a good choice, right? You know, he's good enough for Jesus, he's good enough for us. Like, he's actually the protector of the universal church, too. So that's not a bad one. And the other one is a no-brainer, St. Michael the Archangel. So, in Regnum Christi, we are under the tutelage, so to speak, of St. Michael the Archangel, and it is proper to us to have a particular devotion there and to turn to him. And when we have projects and things that are important that are going on, our apostolates, or needs, or especially if we feel like we're being spiritually attacked or something, I mean, in general, the Catholic Church is under St. Michael's protection. He is the leader of God's armies, as they say in Daniel, the book of Daniel. But particularly in Regnum Christi, he is our protector. And then we have two patrons. You know who they are? St. Paul. St. Paul is one. I'm sorry? Well, the ECYD, because they have like girl saints and all that. you know, Saint Inez or whatever. No, the patrons of Regnum Christi are John and Paul, John the Evangelist and Saint Paul. Okay. So, when the Pope Benedict is talking, because this was the Feast of the Archangels, he talks about what is the function of Saint Michael. First of all, his name is very cool. The name Michael means who is like God. So again, that El, which is the word for God, appears. Who is like God? And that puts him in direct contraposition to Satan. Because what was Satan's, when the moment of his rebellion, you remember the famous words that he uttered? I will not serve. That was the first, but why won't I serve? I will be like God. The original temptation in the Garden of Eden to Adam and Eve, you will be like gods. And he corrupted it because here's the whole tragedy. Adam and Eve already were like God. They were made in God's image and likeness. And as long as they remained in friendship, they were like God. He lived in them and they lived in him. And they were these beautiful reflections of him. But he somehow convinced us, as he tries to do continually every time he tempts us, that, you know what, God is a limitation to your freedom. If you really want to be like God, choose for yourself, do whatever you feel like, and then you will be like God. That was Satan's first temptation, and it's the exact same thing he does to us. So whenever we face that temptation, which frankly is any temptation that we ever face falls under that category, we can turn to St. Michael, because his challenge to Satan was, who is like God? Rhetorical question. Absolutely nobody is like God. There is only one God. Only God is God. And anybody who is a pretender to that title or to those privileges or whatnot is an absolute, it's the most radical contradiction that you can be in as a creature. To aspire to be like God without God. That's our classic temptation, right? It literally is impossible to come up with a bigger contradiction than to try to be like God, but without, you know, kicking God out of the equation. It's the biggest thing you can possibly do. That is Satan's nature. He well, not his, not the, the God-given nature, but it is the nature that he has taken unto himself, his false fallen nature. So in history then, we see that the devil, what is his ploy with us? He does two different things. And actually, I kind of already started spelling it out. The devil, fallen angel, the name Satan, do you know what that name means? Devil means the divider, but Satan means the accuser. Which is why when the Ayatollah Khomeini used to talk about the United States and he called us the great Satan and Israel was the little Satan. In a certain sense, he was correct, because if Satan means the accuser, and we were always accusing him of stuff, rightly, because he deserved to be accused, but anyway, we were always holding up a mirror to him and saying, look, this is not good. Satan accuses two different ways. He accuses, first of all, God, with the logic that we just spoke about, that God is a limitation to your freedom, and you will be better off and happier if you choose to use your freedom in a way that contradicts God's will, because one way or another, he's holding out on you. That's the accusation against God. But the moment that you accuse God, immediately the next step is he's going to accuse us. And we see him doing that repeatedly in sacred scripture, especially in the book of Job. Remember how the book of Job begins? You know, if you were Protestants, you would know. I'm going to buy you each a Bible, okay? Read the thing. Now, in the book of Job, which is obviously, it's sacred scripture, it's revealed, but it is a story. It's an invented story that God used to convey, you know, wisdom. I don't believe that literally, physically, that Job, you know, suffered the things he suffered, and then, you know, however many camels and everything God gave him. The very beginning is God sees Satan and says, hey, what are you doing? Well, patrolling the world and roaming around and seeing what trouble I can stir up. And God says to him, have you seen Job, my servant, and how upright and righteous he is, and how he always just does things to please me? And Satan, what does he do? The exact first thing he accuses. He says, oh, yeah? Well, start touching his property, and I guarantee you he'll reject you to your face. And then God says, okay, try it. And then round two, you know, Satan touches, you know, kills his children, takes his property, burns, earthquakes, storms, everything. Total disaster. And God says, well, Job is still looking pretty good here. What do you have to say now? Well, touch his person, his health and everything. And then he will revile you to your face. So God allows, he says, as long as you don't kill him, do whatever you want. So Satan gets in there and starts doing all this stuff to him. But what's he doing? He's accusing. That's the only thing he really knows how to do. And when you and I face our judgment, when we die and we face our particular judgment, Satan will be there accusing and saying all the things that we ever did. And you know, God being absolute truth will simply say, if God looks at us and sees that we are full of grace and that we have, despite whatever weaknesses, that we are people who choose love, he'll say to Satan, you know what? Go to hell. he says, what's the point of saying that? I'm already there. But anyway, but Satan will be there accusing with, you know, hopefully with limited success, but that's his nature. He can't help. He has chosen that path, and he can't help but to accuse. That's what he's chosen to become. Now, this begs the question. Let's look at our own society. I'm getting a little sidetracked because it's supposed to be about the angels and it's turning into about Satan, but let's look at our own society. How often do we see in our culture, a tendency to constantly, to no matter what we see happening, to find a reason to put a label on it that this is evil, and to accuse and to mistrust. I think particularly when that whole explosion of wokeness happened a couple of years ago, and they used race in that particular. Basically, if you were a white Christian man, that was like you were essentially the devil. So they used race and gender ideologies and everything. But think about things like this. The family was constructed as something that is evil and oppressive. Where does that come from? That's, you know, accusation of everything that is good, that is true, that is noble. Being working hard was seen as something that privileged people do, and everything that is according to human nature, that is good, that builds us up, that builds as individuals and as families and as a culture and as nations and society and whatnot, was being systematically accused and attacked. Where does that come from? That doesn't only come from us. It's not just that people with philosophies are out there doing things. Behind that, whether or not they're willing to admit it, behind that was somebody smarter who was throwing out his, you know, the weeds among the wheat, right? Throwing out all those seeds of weeds that were being thrown out into our culture. And when we see the divisions, whenever we see, again, think of the two titles of the devil. The devil means the divider, dia and bolos. Satan means the accuser. Whenever we see divisions and accusations and mistrust and pitting people against each other, guarantee that does not come from the Holy Spirit. Now, being as that this talk is about the angels in our spiritual lives, again, if we want a firm defense against that, then we should have a devotion to, first of all, the angels, okay? They are God's army. They want to bring about his kingdom. And God doesn't need angels any more than he needs us, right? God being infinite power, goodness, being itself, he chooses to want to work through angels and saints. He chooses because he is glorified when he has creatures that are capable of freely choosing to unite our efforts with him, and being his humble instruments. Like I said, he could just, if he was selfish about things, he could just say, you know what, you guys, you're not going to do a good job. I'm just going to smash the devil and everybody else immediately, instantaneously, with zero effort. Boom, done. But he chooses to work through us so that he can have creatures that are God-like and that freely cooperate with his grace. And therefore, if he's given us this construct, then, you know, again, the logical thing is let's take advantage of it, right? We have friends. And that's the way I think we need to look at God's army, is it's an interesting kingdom that Christ established. You know, when he's talking to Pontius Pilate, he says, you are a king then. Well, he says, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then my soldiers, you know, would be fighting and whatnot. Well, what kind of a kingdom is it? It's a unique kind of a kingdom where he only wants us in his kingdom if we freely choose. He's not going to force anybody. You know, most kings, and for example, in the United States, it's like, sorry, but you live in our borders. If you were born here, you're an American. If you want to reject it and move elsewhere, you can do that. But as long as you're here, you're one of us, and you're going to abide by our laws. Okay? Christ has this kingdom where only people who freely choose and want to cooperate will be part of it. And what that means then is if we are in his kingdom, that means that we're united by one thing, which is love. And that everybody in his kingdom, it's not just that we're soldiers with roles, it's that we are friends. The angels are our friends. That's the way they want to be dealt with. They need to be respected, but they are friends. The saints are our friends. And we are called to friendship among ourselves. Actually, even Thomas Aquinas, when he talks about theological charity, he puts it under the category of friendship. You know, the two it is the most perfect form. It is a friendship, but it's where you have two people that voluntarily, you know, unite and share goods and whatnot. That falls under the category of friendship. Even marriage, it's a particular form of it, but marriage falls under the category of friendship, which is why you should be, you know, begin with friendship before you move into the intimacy of marriage and whatnot. You know, marriages where people get married and they weren't friends beforehand, well, they're building on very shaky ground. You better become friends eventually, quickly, or else before long you'll become enemies, you know. By the way, quick parenthesis, a very beautiful couple that I know is going through very rough times. Even last night I was getting these messages. It's like, oh my gosh. So pray for this anonymous, wonderful couple that, you know, the devil attacks families. So they, they're going through their battles right now. So what conclusions can we get out of this? Pope Benedict, by the way, also mentions the Book of Tobit and Raphael and healing. I'm just going to mention it in passing. The idea that Raphael, the healer, and his name just means the healing of God. What does he do? He brings sight to somebody who is blind, which Pope Benedict kind of equates to the idea of the blindness stemming from lack of faith. And how do we overcome that? Well, he mentions, because he's talking to bishops, more than anything, the sacrament of confession, reconciliation. So I'm just going to make mention of that, and certainly I am available whenever I'm not blabbing. I'm available for confession, and after the retreat, I'm available. So that's always something that, as good RC members, we should be doing that regularly. End of close point. But basic conclusions then from this. If the angels are something that they're part of this army, this church that Christ has built, you know, what does that practically mean for us? Because the angels are not meant to be the center. Only God is meant to be the center of attention. Well, number one, we need to learn from the angels. Okay, angels are teachers. Again, when Pope Benedict was talking about the fact that because they are totally in the presence of God and then they come as messengers to us, you know, by everything about them, when we look to them, and when we listen to the messages that they tend to bring, they will be teachers to us. What are they going to teach us? Well, they're going to teach us ultimately devotion to Christ. Now, each one of us has a guardian angel. And again, you think about it, guardian angels, I don't know, I think, you know, normally we think of them being the lower ranges. Actually, I think in reality, guardian angels can be any particular of the nine choirs. Like St. Faustina, I think, actually had like one of the seraphim or something, and that's like the very top rung, you know, just one step down from the Blessed Mother. Kind of, imagine having that one for your guardian angel. It's like, I think mine must have been a wino in another life, but so I think, first of all, to learn from the angels, you know, we can obviously, when we see references to them in sacred scripture, take it to prayer, but, you know, talk to them, ask them for light, ask them for inspiration, for grace. When we begin our prayers, I know I've mentioned that typically I will ask God, because I love that section from Romans chapter 8 when he's saying, you know, we don't know how to pray as we ought, therefore the Spirit intercedes. But also typically, well, I mean, when I take the time to do things well, you know, I will try to begin by asking the Blessed Mother. We know, according to so many saints, that any prayer that is, whatever we do, when we offer it up through the hands of the Blessed Mother, she will offer it to God in the way that's most pleasing to him. It's kind of like, what's his name? Saint Louis de Montfort and that whole kind of spirituality. But then the next thing I will tend to do is, you know, ask my guardian angel, look, God gave you the mission of taking care of me for a reason. So let's work together on this. Okay. So ask him to teach me how to pray, to enlighten me, to protect me from the distractions and the temptations and whatever else. He wants to enter into a relationship with us. You think about it, I mean, God didn't make your guardian angel strictly for the sake of taking care of you, because that would mean that his only function was you, and which would be very selfish of us. But he did give us the mission. It's just like you have a dignity and a value in and of yourself. You are not in function of anybody else. But nonetheless, once you got married and had kids, you do have responsibilities to them, and your children are particular. You have a particular role to watch over them. Well, I think the guardian angel is something similar with them. They exist for their own sake and for God, but God has said, this guardian angel is assigned to this person. And they receive their greatest glory when we turn to them and they are able to work in our lives and we give them the space to work. Secondly, in the realm of spiritual combat, guardian angels have a role to protect. And this is another thing that I think we don't tend to take stock of sufficiently. We all know the St. Michael the Archangel prayer, which is one that we should be praying regularly. There's a reason why Pope Leo wrote it. You know, he had that vision. He saw the church getting attacked, and he immediately said, St. Michael the Archangel, and starts writing because he saw, you know, invisible form, the spiritual war that was happening and was about to be happening. The angels have tremendous power. You know, people, when you listen to exorcists, they will say frequently, they will know of the intercession of angels, and they'll know the moment that it happens. There's a legionary who is an exorcist, and, you know, like most exorcists, very humble guy, not at all full of, completely the opposite, but he was saying the first time he took part in an exorcism, he was assisting. I don't remember, maybe he had to actually do it, but it was the first time he didn't know what he was doing practically, and he was feeling scared. And he said, you know, he's a little skinny guy. And who the person he had to do the exorcism over was physically much bigger and stronger. So he starts saying the prayers, and this guy just up and charges him. He sees his face twisted. He says he was horrified. He thought he was going to get killed. This big dude just like lunges out of the chair, and he's lunging, and all of a sudden it looks like he got hit by a linebacker, just got blown right back into his chair. Just but it was like physically, there was a physical object that hit this guy, just boom, right back down. Yeah, you know, clearly it was an angel. And that was taught him not to be afraid. You know, it's a natural fear. It wasn't like he doubted or anything. It's just, obviously, if you see somebody twice your size lunge at you with this horrible expression on his face, there'll be a little bit of something going on. But he said, you know, he believes, okay, that was my guardian angel. He was there watching and just, boom, back in your spot. It's a physical manifestation of a spiritual reality. We should, as I mentioned earlier, ask for their help in prayer, but also in day-to-day life. The classic guardian angel, I need a parking spot. Guardian angel, you know, St. Anthony's let me down, but I can't find my car keys, so now how about you? Just day-to-day life. Now, your guardian angel is not your personal secretary. We need to respect them, but when there's a friendship, when there is true friendship and familiarity, then we shouldn't be afraid to ask, right? Okay, here's something. There are in the spiritual life what are called generational spirits, demons. So there are all kinds of angels and all kinds of demons. The theologians think that there are probably more angels out there than there have been human beings created. Now think about how many billions of human beings there are in human history, and there are more angels. Interesting fact, each angel is a unique species unto himself. Human beings are all the same species. Every angel is an absolutely unique species. Imagine God's infinite creativity, billions and billions of these species. Each one is unique. Just a fun fact. So, There are such a thing as generational spirits. Generational spirit is, for example, you have a guardian angel. You also have a quote-unquote guardian devil, somebody who's assigned to you. Your family also has somebody assigned to them. Our nation has a demon assigned to it. Different groups have demons assigned to them, probably different ethnic groups, etc., etc. There are these hierarchies and whatnot. Okay, same thing is also true angelically. God assigns protectors, angels, and also saints that will fill in some of those roles that the demons were supposed to have, the ones that fell away. We're supposed to have certain responsibilities in God's hierarchy, and then they failed, so then he'll raise up like a St. Francis or somebody to fill that role. So angels and saints have roles. We can entrust our families, we should entrust our families regularly to our angels. Whoever, we don't necessarily know them by name, that's another thing. The whole idea of naming your angel, bad idea. Now, I do remember there was a homily by Pope Benedict that really touched people back in the day. There was a Bavarian tradition that, like, if you ask your guardian angel for his name, like, right before you fall asleep, and then you wake up first thing in the morning, whatever the first name that pops into your head is, it's like it's your angel telling you. Pope Benedict believed that. Seems like a nice, charming little thing. It never occurred to me to actually remember to do it. But going around just naming names for your guardian angel, bad idea, because names have power. And you do not have authority over your angel. You are not higher than your angel. You don't get to... That's why in the Bible, whenever somebody asks an angel, what's your name? He says, what do you need to know for? So, God is the one who gives names. Higher beings name lower beings. Adam and Eve named the animals. The animals didn't name Adam and Eve. Okay? So we don't give names to our angels, but we can just simply say, look, angels help, guardian angel, whoever you are, or angel assigned to my family, whoever you are, and turn to them. Families are under attack. We are being bombarded. God gives us all kinds of means. It's not to freak us out and not to make us superstitious or anything, but just very simply, the family is under attack, but God has given us angels. Let's turn to them. Let's ask them. Watch over our family. You know, every night do a little guardian angel prayer or something before you go to bed. Watch over. You can do sealing prayers, for example, over your family, over your house, over your possessions, all those things. Those things have their effect. Okay. And I think I have been talking to you too long, so we will wrap it up. So those are the takeaways. Learn from the angels. Turn to them for protection, especially in spiritual combat. Ask for their help in day-to-day things. Be their friends. And remember, let us remember to entrust our families and our apostolates, for example. You're starting a new walk with purpose. You know, ask the angels to watch over it. And that's that.